So in this class so far, we've discussed a number of different web technologies. Some of them, like JavaScript and Java, are particularly useful in making nice appearing web pages or in otherwise doing good things for the user interface, or dynamic web pages, as sometimes it's called. Tonight, while Professor Fox is away, I'm going to talk about one of the earlier technologies. In fact, this is one that's been around from the very beginning, which is when the web got started and we had browsers with HTML pages. Essentially, the only way that you could connect your web page, which consisted just of static information, to something more dynamic was to use what's called the Common Gateway Interface, the CGI interface, to connect to programs that would run on the web server machine. So from the client machine, where the browser is displaying a web page, you could link to programs on the web server machine, and they could run, they could access files, they could access databases, and so on. And one of the reasons that we're going to do this is that one of the techniques for accessing databases that you're going to be working on when you work on SQL and Oracle uses the CGI programming interface. So tonight I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to have you do a simple homework that uses a CGI script to process input from an HTML form. There was another remark I was going to make, but I've forgotten it. So the CGI scripts that we're going to be to write are, we're going to write in the language Perl, which you all started in Monday night's lecture. And that is, in fact, the most common language that's used for CGI scripting right now, is the language Perl. And it's very useful for that because of its string processing capabilities. So I'm kind of assuming that a lot of you have seen, that you've all, in fact, seen web pages like this. Let me show you one. This is our ad for a professional certificate that we're giving through University College that's going to teach this class and CPS 606 this summer in the evening. So you're already taking this material, but I just wanted to show you that we have, as part of this, an application form that's online. So you've probably seen similar forms. They look different on the Macintosh, but you can see that there are fields for people to type in. These are all text fields, and this particular form has lots of text fields because most of the application is text information. But down at the bottom here, there are some other things. There are some questions that you're supposed to answer yes or no, and these questions have checkboxes, so you can click either yes or no on each one of these. So essentially, each pair of these is what Java would call a checkbox group, because you're only allowed to check one of them. And there's some other checkboxes down here about charging things, and I believe that they're also a checkbox group. Right, and what on the HTML form, what these are called are radio buttons. Now, with an HTML form, when you fill in the information, nothing happens until finally there are only two buttons allowed, only two kinds of buttons. Everything else is some form of text field or text area, check boxes. There are option lists, either scrollable or pull down. And that's about it. When people fill in the information, finally what happens is they can click this button that says submit, or usually some words to that effect. And when that happens, I won't do that because this is a real application form and it'll get sent to us with all, with all these blanks. The information on this form is sent to a CGI script on the web server that's going to do something with the information. And in our case, the information, the application information is written to a file, and it's also emailed to a person who's going to process it. So So writing those CGI scripts and how to do that is what we're going to talk about tonight. There's one more thing I want to do before I go to tonight's main talk, and that is that on Monday night when you did Pearl, I believe that Professor Fox didn't get to associative arrays. So I just briefly want to tell you about associative arrays. Did you do arrays on Monday night, regular arrays? You did regular. And so you can introduce them and you can index them with square brackets, and they're indexed from 0 to n minus 1 to get values out of the array. Or you can treat all the values in the array as a list, essentially, right? So you talked about that. There's another kind of array in Perl that you're going to be talking more about in the next Perl lecture, and those are called associative arrays, and essentially they're different from regular arrays because you don't index them with integers. You index them with keywords or whatever, or numbers. They can be strings or numbers, whatever you want, keywords. And you can think of an associative array as essentially a table where there's a set of keywords which, as I said, can be strings or numbers. They're used for the indexing. And each one is paired with a value so that when you index into an associative array, for example, with the value Barney, you would get out, or the keyword Barney, you would get out the value, a string, llama. Or it could be numbers stored as the values or whatever. So the syntax for that, I'm afraid this is a little small, but you treat these like regular arrays, except that when you use the name of the array as an entire array, you put percent sign in front of it. Perl is so fond of all these special characters to put on the names of variables and things. When you actually index, here's an example of indexing. So words is the name of our array. When we want to index with something, we have a scalar variable here called $name that has a keyword in it, and we put it in these are curly braces. So the way that you can tell associative indexing from regular array indexing is that you use curly braces instead of square brackets. And what you get out is the value associated with that index. So I will leave it to the next Perl lecture to talk more about properties of associative arrays, but I just wanted to introduce that concept because I'm going to be discussing a little bit tonight a Perl program that has an associative array in it. Okay. So this is the main part of the lecture. I thought they were going to fix the projectors over break so they didn't lose the left-hand side, but apparently not. Well, let me know if we get to when we get on. Oh, yours is okay. Theirs isn't centered properly. So the first talk that we're going to be doing is going to discuss how to do this CGI programming, and it's going to talk a little bit about how the scheme works. Essentially, the CGI programming uses the regular protocols for web clients to talk to web servers in order to send the information back and forth. So actually, to do CGI programming, we have to know just a little bit about what that protocol looks like. And that protocol is called the HTTP protocol. I'm only going to use little bits of it tonight, and then next time we'll talk more about the background of the HTTP protocol, just as general information for your understanding. The other thing that is involved with the HTTP protocol is the protocol by which the web server sends URLs, uniform resource locators, which I think you're all familiar with from using the web, to the web server, and the web server makes the appropriate response. Now, part of the protocol involves the way in which the messages are formatted, which are sent from the web browser to the web server and back again. These messages are formatted in a protocol which is pretty much the same as the MIME protocols for sending email messages across the Internet. So MIME stands for multipart. Whoops, I've forgotten. It's on your sheet. Multipart Internet Mail Extensions. Right, and this is all the part of... So we had email for a long time, and people wanted to send more complicated documents, and the MIME protocols are all aimed at providing that more complicated protocol. So we'll talk a little bit about that next time as well. This time we'll just sort of see some more practical examples about how to use that. So we will talk about how to pass information from the web page to the server, which gets set to the to a CGI script, and what your CGI script should do to process information and send a response back to the web client. We'll be using Perl as the scripting language. Here is a list of books that I've used at one time or another in classes. There are a lot of books, and many of them are no doubt wonderful. I just haven't had a chance to look at them all. In particular, the last two I've used as textbooks and courses, and it's been pretty, it's been fine. The O'Reilly book, in fact, with CGI programming, is more concise and covers lots of topics, including more issues about security and email and interfacing to databases. It has more topics. The book by William Wineman called The CGI Book is more thorough in its discussion of how CGI works. So if you really need to use some CGI, you might want to get one of these books as references to really get the word on how to do that. So let's just talk about how the web client, which is the browser, interacts with the web server and the CGI script. So first, let's talk about how the web browser, the client, does ordinary HTTP requests. An ordinary HTTP request comes by sending a URL, and most of them start with http://, that means use the HTTP protocol, to the web server. The web server, every web server is installed with a collection of documents, sometimes called the htdoc space. And if the URL specifies a document in its collection, then the web server will send it back. That's the normal thing that a browser does, is just request a document and have it sent back. So there's a little bit more that happens than that normal thing. First of all, it's possible that the URL that's sent can specify other Internet services besides HTTP. You may have seen links to the form FTP:// or MailTo:// and those with the links with URLs of that form, the web server will just pass those requests on to the appropriate server on the host machine. So on the host machine, there will be... if there's FTP service, there will be a daemon running that's supposed to do FTP, and the web server just passed the request there. If it's a mail to, it just passed the request to whatever's the standard mail program on the web server, and so on. So we know what it does with regular HTTP service. It retrieves the file named by the URL, and it decides what to do based on the file type. In the normal case, the file type will be something like do you know what I mean by file type? I mean the extension. So the document name will be something .html or .au or .something else. So if it's HTML, then it knows to send back an HTML file. MPEG-AU. Any of these are audio or video documents, and it knows that all it has to do is send it back. On the other hand, if the file extension is recognized as something executable, that is what triggers the CGI service. So the web server, if it's supposed to retrieve a file, it will actually, there's two things. The file will actually be in a separate space called the CGI directory, from the where you put all the executables, and it will have an extension like .pl for Perl or .cgi for other executables. So if the web server, though, recognizes it as an executable, it passes whatever message it got along with the URL to the executable program, and that's the CGI script, the Perl program that we're going to learn how to write. There are various ways that the web server takes information from the browser message and passes it as parameters to the CGI program, and we'll discuss all those tonight later in the lecture. So once the CGI program has information about this request, then it just goes off and executes and does whatever it has to do. It can do any number of dynamic things, like execute other programs on the server, write things to files, read things from files, connect with a database server, like what you're going to do with using Oracle, or anything else that this program is allowed to do as an executable program on the web server. But in particular, after the CGI program has done whatever it's supposed to do, it must send a response back to the browser, because the browser and the server have kept open this connection. The browser made a request to the server, the web server, and it hasn't sent back a response yet. So this connection is still open. The CGI program is required to send a response. It will send a header line to the server and tell it what the type of response is. There are actually three types of responses. Two are listed here. One is it can say location, and then it will give the URL of some document that the web server is supposed to send back, an already existing document. So you may say, well, that sounds just like, why didn't the browser just ask for that URL? Well, the reason is that the CGI program can decide on the fly which of some number of URLs it might want to send back to the client, based on characteristics of information that it got from the browser about the client. But the more common thing is that the CGI program is going to format an HTML page that has information that the user wants. And if it does that, it will send back a header that says content type, and it will give whatever type. It can be HTML. Actually, it can send back other types of things as well. And the third type, which isn't listed here, is that you can get back one of those error messages that we're also fond of, you know, error 404, permission not granted, or whatever they are, error 500, mouth. Well, you get all these error messages, right? So the CGI program can send those. Then when the CGI program terminates, the web server closes the connection. So let me just say now that the way that this all works, if you make a mistake in a CGI program, it's easy to use up lots of resources on the web server. The most common mistake is that your CGI program fails to terminate for some reason. The web server keeps the connection open, and there are only so many of those that it can happen before the web server gets totally hung up or crashes. And that's the reason why most people with real public information web servers don't allow anyone to install or experiment with their own CGI scripts on the web server. So, for example, web.syr.edu doesn't allow you to put up CGI scripts. They allow you to put your own web pages, but they don't allow you to put up CGI. The main MPAC web server, we don't allow you to put up CGI. But we do have a special web server installed on Osprey 7 that's where your impact accounts are, that we have set up specifically so that you can safely try out CGI programs. In fact, that web server runs more slowly because we've set it up so that if other students should crash it for some reason, you each get a copy and you wouldn't be hung up because somebody crashed the web server. Public web servers are set up to run faster, and if anybody crashes it, you know, that's sort of it. So essentially, you each get your own copy of the web server when you run, and it's just a little slower. But it's set up so that you can write CGI scripts, and inevitably, we all make mistakes when we write programs, and things will go wrong. But you can play around with it. So first, I have a really simple example. You know, this projector has another problem, which is it's dark down at the bottom. Switch, huh? But the other projector is fine. It would be better if I could put this frame up just a little bit on the screen. But that's the Mac. I want AUX. Just do it twice, and it does it brighter. What? Reset, right. I think it also helps if I turn your lights down a touch. Okay, so here's a first really simple example of how this all works. Here's an example with some HTML that shows how to write a really simple form. Actually, with the program that I'm going to show you, the CGI script, it is so simple, it doesn't actually take any input from the form. I'm just going to show this to you as an example, and I could have activated the CGI script in one of two ways. I can activate it by putting a form in my HTML, or I can activate it just by putting a link, one of those Ahref things, directly to the CGI program. You can call a CGI program directly from a link in your HTML. But this one uses a simple form, and I kept the HTML pretty simple so I could fit it all on one slide. In the body here, there's a header. The form has two attributes. The first is an attribute called method, and this is one of two things on every form. It's either post or get. And I'll explain the difference a little later. I'm using post here. In fact, most of the time people use post. It has a second attribute called action, and here's where you put the URL of the CGI script that you're going to use. And on the slide, I made up a dummy URL so that I didn't publicize exactly how things appeared on our web server, but notice that it ends in a directory CGI bin in which there's a file called helloworld.perl or .pl. And so that's the clue that this is an executable script. Then I have some text, and I have finally just the one button. It's a submit button. You put a submit button into a form by giving an input tag in which the attribute type is submit, and the value is whatever label you want to put on the button. So this one's labeled go ahead. Then I put the slash form, that's the end of the form tag, and slash body for the end of the HTML. And if you haven't written forms in HTML when you do your homework, I'll show you where there's some information about writing forms. And it's really pretty easy to put the tags in. So here's the CGI program that the action attribute of the form that we just saw refers to. And so this is a Perl program. And so the starting line on any Perl program you probably discussed on Monday is this special comment with a hash mark. Comments always start with a hash mark, but this one is on the first line and is followed by an exclamation point so that the system knows that this is supposed to be the address of where the Perl interpreter is. And in general, Perl interpreters are in user bin Perl. On Osprey 7, it happens to be in a slightly different place, but I'm going to give you specific instructions for how to do that. So here are two more comments. They have the hash mark in front. And then the connection between a CGI script and the web server for returning output is particularly simple, returning a response to the browser. And that connection is that everything that the Perl program writes to standard output, in this case with a print statement, if you don't give any file handle, it assumes that you're writing to standard out. Instead of going to a terminal somewhere, this output is going to the web server to be used to format a response to the browser. So whatever you want to send to the browser, you just print it at the web server and it will handle it. There is one magic thing that you have to tell the web server, and that is the first line of your header of the response has to be one of those things, content type, location, or error, to tell the web server what kind of response to make. This particular one, I'm going to be sending an HTML file which the browser will use to format the response to this form. So I put content type colon text slash HTML, and then I have to put, and there's a slash, then I put a new line, and I have to put an extra new line. It's very important that you put those two slash ends on the end, because that tells the web server that you're done with the header information. Yes? Oh, right, there's not another slash. That's an L. I couldn't quite read that. Because it's possible that there would be other subtypes of the type text. So this is all actually the real reason is that this has to conform with the MIME types. This is a standard MIME type for the contents of a message. And so text, there are seven types, HTML is a subtype. So it recognizes that. So then after I'm done with the header information, I can print anything I want, and the server just passes it right on through to the browser. The browser knows from the header that it's supposed to interpret whatever comes as HTML. So I can just print lines of HTML. I can put on each line exactly the same kind of stuff that I would put on the line of an HTML file if I were writing it. And in order to make this all fit on one slide, of course, I kept the HTML very simple. I have a header. I have a body that just prints out one thing, hello world. So let me show you where you can find this example from your class webpage so that you can look at it. Under CGI and Perl is a list to our CGI and Perl resources. The lectures I'm giving are here under lectures. In addition, there is a lecture on HTML, and there's another forms tutorial which I'm going to link into the homework assignment. So the lecture I'm giving now is this one in the middle. But under examples are the examples I'm going to go over, and like your JavaScript examples, there's a menu up here of what examples are installed. And this first one is the Hello World example. So here is the HTML of my form. All it said, there was a form tag, and inside the form tag it said click here to activate the Hello World script. You can see the HTML down here. And unlike the slide, I went ahead and put in more HTML. So notice that the form, actually, the action field is a tag that's going to the CGI server on Osprey 7. Where the Perl resides. So yours will be slightly different than that. So next, let's actually click on this submit button, and so it comes back and says, hello world, and here is the Perl. I'm going to show you this Perl as well, because I actually made this Perl program be a little fancier. Instead of just printing that stuff that I showed you, which all it did was print hello world, I also printed this message that showed what date it was run at, because it's not very exciting to print just hello world. At least you can see from the date that it was run right this time. So let me show you how that works. I believe that I can blow up this frame. So just like the slide, it starts with a magic incantation. Actually, this is where Perl is on the Osprey 7 system, user local bin Perl. Here are some other comments. I print the header line content type text/html /n/n. And then I put just regular HTML. I put body. Here's the hello world that's printed. And the one other thing I did was, I don't remember if you've seen this in your Perl lecture or not, but there are various ways for Perl to issue to the system it's running on essentially Unix command lines. And one of them is that you can issue a Unix command line by putting these back quotes around it. And date is a command, is a Unix command that returns the current time from the system. So I assign this, it returns it as a string. I assign it to this variable $date, and then I use it to print the message to the browser, this program was run on $date. So that's how I got that to work. All right? Any questions about that? So that's the message that has the date on it. So this shows the mechanism of how the CGI works. I made a form that ran on the client. When you click the submit button, it transmitted a message to the web server to run this Perl script. The Perl script sent back HTML, which appeared on the browser window, right? And it's particularly easy to send back output because all you have to do is print it. So what's a little more complicated is the way that you pass input to the Perl script, because there are several ways to do it. And one of the ways is that you can pass information to any CGI script, including a Perl script, through what are known as environment variables. And these function essentially the same as Unix environment variables function when you log into your account. Perl can directly access environment variables. And actually, you can write CGI programs in other languages like C, and there are libraries which allow you to access the environment variables. So there are a number of special environment variables that the web server uses to communicate information that it got passed in the message from the web browser. So there are two environment variables in which you can use to pass information: query string and path info. So environment variables are represented in all caps with an underbar wherever there would have been a space. And one of the ways in which to pass information with these environment variables is if in your HTML, instead of putting a form, you just put a link directly to a Perl program. So suppose you've done that. Here's an example. Here's a link tag. A, href equals, and the URL that's given is an HTTP address of a Perl program. And then after the Perl program, there's a question mark, and then there can be any other string that you want to have. In this case, I put in the string past argument. So when the browser sends this link, this URL, to the web server, as it's processing the URL, it looks at the HTTP service, it finds it's already on the right web server, it finds the file, and it says, oh, this is executable. So if a question mark is next, whatever is here is put into the environment variable query string. So whatever you put into the link can be passed to the CGI program in that environment variable. There's another thing that you can do. Suppose you have a link in which you have an executable program. This is an example where the executable program is called walk.perl. Then if the next thing is a slash, everything that follows is put into an environment variable called pathinfo. So in this case, the web server would put direction equal north slash speed equal slow into the pathinfo environment variable. So it's quite common, for example, that one of these techniques is used to have a direct link to some search engine where you might pass keywords in one of these environment variables for the search engine to use. You can set up other ways for CGI scripts to be used where these things are passed in. If you want an example of that, I'll send you the URL of the Star Wars homepage, and you can see, find the quiz, and you can see that every time you answer a question, succeeding calls to the Perl script, you pass it in after the question mark, so that you're always passing more input to the Perl script. Don't ask me why I know where the Star Wars homepage is. I have kids. That's why I know. Now, the other methods that we're going to talk about to pass information to the CGI script involve putting forms on the HTML. And the first way is, I told you that there were two methods. The first way is if you put method equals get. When you put method equals get, then all the input that the user types in to the various input fields in the form is put into an environment variable, the environment variable query underbar string. It's the same one as on the previous page. So here's an example of a form where it has method equals get. The action is some Perl script. And it has several input fields. These are all text fields. So there's a label, type your first name. There's an input field where the name is a string. And then there's another text field where the name is a different string. There's only two text fields here. And one is called first name, and one is called last name. So in the various ways to type in input, the form, the select fields, the various text fields that come under the tag input, the checkboxes, the radio buttons, all of those have an attribute called name. And whatever string you give to the attribute name is what the browser is going to use to label the user's response. So you can think of that whatever string you give to the attribute name as being the label of this field or the keyword associated with this field. You can think of each field as generating a keyword with a value. And the keyword will be the string that you give to the name, and the value will be whatever response the user gives. In this case, whatever text the user types in will be sent as a string. So when you in the form, you give a submit button. This is what the user is going to click when it's ready for all the information to be sent. If the user typed in Winona Ryder, Winona for the first name and Ryder for the last name, then the environment variable encodes this into a string. We'll talk about the encoding in a minute, but essentially you can see that here is the label of the first field, or the keyword of the first field. It's called first name. Then it's equals the value of the first field. Then there's an ampersand. The label of the second field equals the value of the second field. So these are all put together with ampersands in between the fields and a big long string that's put into QueryString. Here's a little piece of a Perl program that might be looking at QueryString to see what the input is. And the way that you access environment variables in Perl is that there's a special variable, $EM, V, and it's actually an associative array, and you can index it with any name of any environment variable, and the string that you get out is the value. So this is how you find out what the query string is in Perl. So actually, this particular Perl program just types back on the browser what the query string was. It will be encoded in this weird way. We'll talk about decoding it in a minute. Now, there's only one problem with using method equals get, and the problem is that there's always a limit on the length of the string that you can assign to an environment variable, and it's different on different systems. So it's not easy to predict how much you can allow the user to type in. I mean, this will work fine if you're guaranteed that you're going to get pretty small responses. But you don't want to use this method if you think you're going to be getting large responses. So that's why I said most people are using the method equals post. There's only very special circumstances in which you'd want to use method equals get. But you sometimes see it used, so that's why I wanted to tell you about it. On the next slide is a list of some of the environment variables that are made available by the web server with information about the web browser to the CGI program. Now, some of these we've already talked about. Some of them are fairly obvious. There's information about the server as well, server name, server software, server protocol. The request method is either get or post if it's a form. We talked about path info. Path translated turns it into real Unix path names. I guess I won't talk about all of these. We talked about query string. Some of these are actually disallowed on most web servers. When the web started, people thought that it was really going to be wide open, and the web server would always tell the CGI script who the remote user was that was accessing the browser, but people decided that that was that you shouldn't be giving information about exactly who the user is to the web server. So that's pretty much been disconnected, and you don't get information on the user ID of the person that's connecting to your web server. You can find out what host they're on, but you can't find out what their user ID is. Content type and content length tell you the type and the length of the message that the browser is sending you. This is information about the HTTP protocol that the browser is using. In particular, you can find out HTTP user agent is the type of browser that the user has. So one thing you can do with a CGI script is to tailor the response that you send according to the type of browser that the user has. You know if they have Netscape 2.0, which doesn't have all JavaScript, or if they have Netscape 3.0, which does, and you might choose different web pages based on what the browser is. So now we come to how to use a form with method equal post to pass data to the CGI script. And in this particular case, the information from the form is passed as input through the standard in mechanism to the Perl program. So in the case that method equal post is used, there will be a body to the browser message, and the content length environment variable is set to the number of characters that are sent in that message. and the content type variable is set to this special MIME type, /xwwwform URL encoded. So this data is also encoded by the server, by the browser, in the same way that the example that we just saw with Winona Ryder. So here's a little more detail about that. The fields are separated by the character ampersand. Within each field, an equal sign separates the field name and the value. Every space is translated to a plus sign. And all the other special characters are encoded to hexadecimal equivalents. The hexadecimal equivalents are two character representations with a percent sign in front. So, for example, if the user typed in an exclamation mark, what the CGI program will get is %3D. That's the hexadecimal equivalent. Now, if this looks a little daunting, don't worry. There's long ago written by NCSA, who brought out the first browsers and used the CGI mechanism, a standard Perl subroutine which is going to read this encoded stuff and decode it for you. So there's a standard subroutine which you can copy and use whenever you want to decode the information that you get. So here's the first part of that Perl subroutine. You've seen some of this Perl syntax already, and you'll be seeing more of it later. This subroutine works either with the get or post method, and it puts the first thing it does is get the string of information from the browser, either whether it's a get method or a post method, and it puts it into a scalar variable, the entire string, called $in. So let's look at that part first. So subroutines in Perl, you start with the keyword sub, then it has the name of the routine, then the body is in these curly braces. There are some local variables used here. This is not a declaration mechanism. This is a subprogram mechanism in Perl, but it makes these variables local to this routine. They're called I, loc, key, and val. Now the first part looks up the environment variable request method in the environment to find out whether it's get or post. So that's the first thing we do. If the request method is equal to get, and remember that when we're testing strings, and so in Perl you have to use ek instead of equal when you're testing strings. You use equal when you test numbers. So if it's get, then we know that the entire string is in the environment variable query string. So we set $in to be equal to whatever's in the environment at the variable query string. So this indexes into the environment. Otherwise, we use this else-if construct. If the request method is equal to post, we have to read the input from the browser out of standard in. And there are various ways to do that. Probably in your Perl lectures, you've been discussing reading a line at a time out of standard in. You put pointy brackets around the keyword stdin, and you read a line, then you can read another line, and so on. But there are other methods for reading out of standard methods. I've also been teaching Java. Subroutines for reading out of standard in Perl. And one of them is getC, and what it does is read the next character out of standard in. And so we just put a loop where the variable I, $i, ranges from 0 to the length of, we find out the length of the input from the environment variable content length, and we keep reading one more character from the input. And what this dot equal does is it catenates the character onto the end of the variable $i. So dot is string catenation in Perl, and dot equal is the abbreviation for dollar in is equal to dollar in concatenate with whatever the result of get C is. So that keeps concatenating on one more character. So by the time we get to the bottom of this, we will have in dollar in, whether the method is get or the method is post, the string that was sent, either through the query string, environment variable, or as the message from the browser. Now, actually, when I give you the homework, I'm going to have you copy a program that has a slightly different version of this subroutine, because I modified this to make it more useful for debugging purposes, which is I added a third option here. If there's no request method, if it's not request method is not get, or the request method is not post, then I just read $in out of the standard input. And the reason I do that is so that I can debug the Perl script as a standalone program, and I just type in sample data as standard in, or I put sample data in a file. And I can run the Perl program anywhere. I don't have to run it by requesting the web server to run it from the browser. And the reason that that's useful is because you get very bad error messages from when you run a Perl script through the web server. Well, they're not bad, they're just uninformative. Essentially, there's one error message that you get no matter what goes wrong. So this is not very helpful. It says, haha, you made an error, guess what it is. That's not what it says. It says 500 malformed header. And people are often off looking carefully to see if they have a malformed header, but actually they have a totally different kind of error. So the next thing that happens, so now that we have all the input that the user typed is one big long string, and remember that it consists of a number of fields separated by ampersands. So the next thing that we're going to do is separate out the fields, and Perl has a handy program called split that if you give it a string, in this case $in, and you give it a regular expression to match with, in this case the single character ampersand, it will return to you a list of all the parts of the string that were separated by ampersands. And we assign that list to a regular array called @in. So this is now a regular array. And Perl does let you use the same variable name in for different types of things. So in fact, this subroutine, I actually don't find this a particularly good style, but it has three different variables called in. One is $in, the scalar variable that has the entire string. One is @in, the regular array that has the list of fields. And the final thing that we're going to see on the next page is an associative array, %in, in which each field name is a keyword and each field value is its value. So that's on the next slide. So first of all, we have to go through and do the decoding on the strings. And I'm not going to go over the detail of that tonight because you haven't done the regular expression part of Perl, but you don't actually have to write this subroutine, you just have to use this subroutine. So I think we can take it on faith that the decoding happens okay. So let me just show what happens. Notice that this for each loop is having the index variable $i range from 0 to the number of elements in the array. Number in is the number of elements in the array @in that we just defined. So this index, so we're going to index into the array. And remember that if you have an array @in, when you index it, you call it $in, even though this is the array and not the scalar variable $in. See why have trouble using the reusing the same variables.
Is it hash also?
What?
Is it hash also for each 0 dot dot dollar hash plus line?
Where? This?
Yeah.
For each?
In the parent. Yeah, there's a hash also.
Oh, that's the length. Oh, I said the wrong thing. I was trying to say what the length of the array was, and a hash. I don't know what I called it, but. Oh, it must be minus 1, because you've got to index from 0 to minus 1. It's been a while since I've used Perl, so I'd have to look up that detail, but this routine works, so I believe that it is. What?
It is minus
1. It is minus 1, right. It's such a useful thing that you have to believe that Perl would have made up exactly the right construct, that you could always range from 0 to n minus 1, the contents of an array. So anyway, so this loop is executed for each element of the array in sub dollar I, and this equal tilde is the string matching, and there are various things that can happen on the right-hand side here to transform the string. You can either find substrings by matching with regular expressions. In this case, the S is the substitute operator. There's also a TR operator for translate. So the substitute operator, first of all, is going to substitute every occurrence of plus to go back to a space. Remember, space is replaced by plus, so this just takes it back. The next one finds all the things of that have percents in front of them and converts them from hexadecimal and packs them into a single character. Okay? So that takes back that conversion. Then we want to isolate the two parts in each field, the field name, which we're treating as a keyword, and the value that the user typed in. And those are separated by equal sign. So these next three statements use parts of substring operators of Perl. Index finds the index location of where the equal sign is. This substring takes everything before the equal sign and assigns it to the variable dollar $t. This substring finds everything after the equal sign and assigns it to the substring, or to the scalar variable dollar $val. Now, it is possible with a form, in certain cases, that you could usefully have two input fields with the same field name. And that case is when you have checkboxes of the same type that you allow people to check more than one. You might not want to have, otherwise you want to have different field names for everything that people type in. So just in case people have more than one thing, you take care of that by putting a separator and catenating the value onto the end of the value of the keywords. But the most common case is that there's only one value assigned to each keyword, and this is an associative array indexing. So now we're introducing a new array in, which is an associative array, and for each keyword that you find, you're assigning the value to it. So the result of this whole thing is that you have an associative array called in, where each keyword is a field name and the value is what the user typed in. So now let's go look at a little more complicated example of how to use that. Only slightly more complicated. So we go back to our examples page, and we'll look at this thing called fill out form. And this is the same pizza form that I've used in several classes. I'm getting kind of bored with it. I'll have to think of something else. But anyway, so here's a form that's just to be an example of a fill out form. It has, first of all, it has an input field. Let's go down. This is the HTML that's formatting that. So here's the start of the form. Well, wait a minute, I went too fast. First, it puts up their internet pizza delivery service, so that's what produced that. Then it goes into the form, and the form tags is method equals post, and it gives the location of the Perl program. Now there's just text. Type in your street address. So whatever text you put in the middle of a form just appears like regular HTML text, right? So essentially it turns out to be a label of the next input field. So this input field, its name is address. One of the things you can do is tell how big that text field is supposed to be. And so that produces that text field. Now next we have another text field. We put text, type in your phone number. This input field, it's the field name is phone. So it puts up that input field. So we can type things in. Now there's a set of checkboxes. So how did that, what kind of HTML produced that? Well, here is the text, what kind of pizza would you like, check one. Then there's a set of boxes, and their type is radio, and that means that you're only allowed to check one of them. So there's the name of this field is topping. The value, the initial value, is what is printed beside the label, beside the checkbox. The value after the when the form is submitted will be either yes or no, depending on whether the user checked it or not. So let's check. We're only allowed to check one. We don't like dead fish, right? Okay. So finally, down here, we have a submit button, and we labeled it order pizza. So here's the text. To place your order, press this button, and we have submit, and the value is order pizza, which is what appears on the button. Now, let me just show you, when you look at this, there's actually a link to some NCSA documentation fill-out forms, and there's a link to the real, this is years old now, Pizza Hut in Santa Cruz. You can actually type in stuff. You can see menus. They have quite, but unfortunately, they don't deliver to Syracuse. Oh, darn. Network error, broken pipe. Oh, good, we didn't lose this. When you look at these examples, notice that there's some other stuff on click and target that has to do with the, we produce special HTML that has to do with the fact that this is showing in two different frames. So that's, when you do your example, you don't have to put that stuff into the links. Okay. All right, so let's order our pizza. And it comes back and it says that we ordered sausage pizza. We wanted it delivered to 019. There's our telephone address, and here's the date and time that the order came in. Unfortunately, this pizza delivery service doesn't deliver pizza either. Ah, well. Let's look at the code. No, that's not what I want. Right mouse. Yes, okay. Okay, so here's our standard opener for Perl. Here's a bunch of comments. And here is the main subroutine. It calls two subroutines called readEntry and printResult. So readEntry is a subroutine that the first thing it does is call readParse. ReadParse is the subroutine that I just showed you that takes the input, whether the method is get or post. It has this added thing that I told you about to read for debugging and does everything else, okay? So when you do an example, you just copy this read parse subroutine and use it. So essentially the first thing you do is do that. Now, when the read parse subroutine is done, I have an associative array called in for every field. Now, I had three fields in my form, and they were called address, phone, and topping. And so I can index into this associative array in and get out the values that the user typed in for address, phone, and topping. And I assign them into these scalar variables, $address, $phone, and $topping. So all you need to do is change this to, you know, whatever fields you have and get out the values of the fields that the user typed in. Now let's, in the main program, after called read entry, the next thing was print results. And here's the print result routine. So the first thing it does is print the header line, which it's required to do, otherwise the web server won't close the connection and it will be a bad thing. And it's followed with two carriage returns so that there's a blank line in between the header and the rest of the stuff. Then this is the HTML that you saw. It said, see, body, it said pizza order in H1 header at the top. Then it printed out what kind of pizza people wanted, and the way it does that is it uses the scalar variable dollar topping. So the value of dollar topping is either going to be pepperoni, sausage, or anchovy, depending on what I clicked. I clicked sausage, so that's why this printed sausage pizza. Then it says deliver to, and it prints what's in dollar address. Telephone, it prints what's in dollar phone. And finally, we did the same trick where we got the date, and we printed in when the date came. And we finish off the HTML by putting back a button that people can get back to where they were by printing a button, an AHREF. Now, the only tricky part about all this is that you do have to be careful. Notice that these are double-quoted strings the way they are in Perl. And there are some special characters that Perl that Perl would recognize as something else that you might want to print at the browser. For example, normally when you print a tag, you say A, href equals quote, double quote, HTTP colon, etc. Well, Perl thinks that double quote closes this string. So Perl has the backslash to put in front of any character that you want to go as is to the browser instead of being treated as a special character by Perl. So when we put backslash double quote, Perl will send a double quote to the browser. Otherwise, it thinks it's the end of the string. So there are some special characters that have that problem. Otherwise, this is pretty straightforward about putting HTML into these print statements and sending it back to the browser. So essentially, what I'm going to have you do for the homework problem, and it's, let me continue with just a couple more slides here, and then, I've run over. Well, I have to do this. We got started late, is my excuse here. So we already talked about the three types of headlines that that your Perl program can put back. It's either location, status for the error messages, or content types that we used in our pizza example. Now, when you're doing CGI programming, you're going to be doing it on a web server where there's a directory for all the documents and another directory for all the CGI programs. And so every server is installed this way. So when you do something like that pizza example, there's going to be an HTML form, pizza.html it's called, which goes in the documents directory. And then I made a Perl script, pizza.perl, that I put in the CGI directory. So you have information on about your NPAC account that talks about where your documents directory is and where your CGI directory is. And I'll give some more details in the homework assignment about how to make sure things end up in the right place. One more thing, though, if you actually want somebody to be able to see your Perl code, you need to put a copy in the documents directory, which I did, so that you can also see the display the Perl code as if it were HTML, or as if it were just ASCII text. Otherwise, the browser keeps trying to execute it. Okay, so one way to use the version I gave of the read parse program, if you use it in a program called program.perl, you can put in a file input as if the browser gave it to you. This less than sign gives this file to the Perl program as standard input, and you can use that for debugging. You know, don't run Netscape or anything at all. Just write your Perl program, put some sample input into this file, like something like input.dat, and run your Perl program on your Unix command line to try it out. And that way, you get lots of good, nice messages from the Perl interpreter about whether you have syntax errors or missing semicolons. If you try it first through the web browser and you have a syntax error, the web browser is going to tell you 500 malformed header, no matter what goes wrong, almost, except for permissions wrong. So I much prefer this. When a program crashes, there should be an error in the error log file, but I think it's much better to debug it first on the command line. The other thing is that don't forget that your Perl program has to have permissions to make it executable by the web server, and I give explicit directions for that also in the homework problem. The other thing is that so your directories are set up. They don't have quite these names, but they have this form, right? There's a document. The server has a document root somewhere. I think this is, in your case, is actually called CPS 616 Spring 97 at this level. And under that, all of you have names. Your names are not nice names like NJM, but names like CB97 something or other, right? So you all have a name there. And you can put HTML or other text files in there, or even the Perl file if you want people to look at it like a document. Then there's another place that's your CGI bin directory. It's called CPS 616 Spring 97 CGI or something. I guess this one was -doc. I don't know. It's all written down in here. Then you have another directory under there, which is where you put Perl stuff. Now notice that if your Perl program is going to be reading and writing to files, and we have other examples which you can look at online in which people, and we'll talk about them next time as well. If you just give a file name, the Perl program assumes it's in the same directory. But you can also give the Perl program relative paths to look at files in other places. So those are just a little collection of some of the things to think about. I did write up this homework assignment. I didn't manage to get it linked to your web page yet, but Mehmet and I will deal with that overnight. And so I'm just asking you to write a very simple one and to do it in a week so that you sort of sort out the whole CGI mechanism. And I think this will be very useful. I mean, handling HTML forms is not the goal. The goal is really that you understand this mechanism to make it easier for you to deal with the CGI mechanism with the databases and so on. But I'm going to ask you just to write a simple HTML form. Okay, thank you all very much. I'm sorry I ran over.